Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base, recorded live at PAX Prime 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. As you'll notice, this is not a numbered podcast. We're doing a whole special series for you.
Yeah, we're going to be bringing you a total of 12 different podcasts recorded live at the BioWare base this year's PAX Prime. So make sure to click subscribe and enjoy.
Thank you all for joining us this morning, and welcome to the Getting a Job at BioWare panel. My name is David Lulegaard. I'm the social media coordinator for BioWare. I'm going to run through the panelists here and let you all introduce yourself, starting with Mike.
Hi, Mike Laidlaw, creative director for Dragon Age. Getting ready for my panel later.
I'm Mesa Klugan, and I'm a lead recruiter for BioWare.
Cameron Lee, I'm a producer at BioWare.
Leanne Cortash, I'm in HR at BioWare.
Guess what? She's at BioWare too.
I'm Tula McNally. I'm the development QA director for Montreal and Edmonton.
Hey, I'm Matt Rhodes, and I'm a concept artist.
Hi, I'm Jacques LeBrun. I'm the technical director for Dragon Age.
I'm Luke Christensen. I'm a senior writer at BioWare.
All right. Just before we start today, I wanted to get sort of a show of hands in the room. Obviously, we have people here from all disciplines across our BioWare studios. Everyone raise their hand who's interested in art.
Wow.
Okay. How about design? How about production?
No. Hey! There you go. Come to the dark side.
How about quality insurance?
Yeah.
All right. And
programming.
Marketing?
Oh,
nice. And programming.
Programming?
Yeah. He's raised his hands like six times.
Yeah, you want everything.
Yeah. All right, good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Hey.
Really? Okay, good. Way to represent. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to start you guys off here with some really tough questions about getting a job at BioWare. I'm going to start with, what's your favorite part about working for BioWare? Start with you, Mike.
Let's see. Okay, so I think, you know, it's I have a weird job where, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and that really is what it is that it's been challenging. I've been there for almost 11 years now, and each and every year has thrown something new at me, a cool new thing to do. You know, changing roles, there's been lots of opportunities for advancement, and definitely kind of this cool broadening. And in terms of what my responsibilities are. But even, you know, regardless of level and stuff, I think the studio itself is very supportive of exploring. Like, there's something I really want to focus in on. One really good example, they aren't here, but Nick Thornbaum and Ben Jelliner are, you know, an editor and concept artist, but they kind of glommed on to working with Dark Horse. They made the World of Thetis lore book you can see over there. And they basically ended up running that entire project by themselves, right? It was something they were really passionate about, and they were able to tackle it. So for me, that level of support in pursuing something I wanted to do, that you know, I can give that to them or whatever, is really, really, really cool.
For me, I would say it's, number one, the people are amazing at BioWare. Everyone is just awesome. We have a very collaborative studio environment, very open, very transparent. Passion as well. Everyone at BioWare is just incredibly passionate about games, about the industry, about what they actually do. I see it every day, and it's so inspiring every day to come to work and see that passion run through. And then also our products. Hello. We make, like, great, great games. And I'm a huge sci-fi and fantasy nerd, so it's just a great place, great place to be.
For me, it's similar to Mike. I mean, no day is ever the same. So that's fantastic to be around. And the people are great, of course, and the level of creativity and focus on quality is more than all the other studios I've worked at probably combined. So,
Well, you know, I'm an HR, so I'm supposed to see the people. But I actually really like the people, so it helps out. One of my, you know, Mike and I came to BioWare around the same time. So, yeah, almost 11 years watching the studio grow and change and evolve. We've become much more, I don't want to say mature, but, you know, just better. We get better every year at what we do, and we're always learning. One of my favorite things is a story I like to tell. I was walking through the office one day, and there was a couple guys, and they were, you know, talking Russian to each other. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I walked into the games room, and there was a couple guys, they were playing ping pong, and they were speaking Dutch to each other. And I'm like, this is fantastic. I love that we have people from all over the world. I get to learn about them, and they get to, you know, learn about us, and we bring them in from everywhere. So I think that that's great, too. It's just really all of these people from all over the world that are really passionate about making our games, and I like being part of that.
So I'm still sort of a newbie. I've been with BioWare for 3 years. And some of the things that are very much fun for me is sheer creativity and to be surrounded by so many creative and smart people in the studio. And sometimes I stop and I think, and when I bump into people like Mike or Preston, I think, yeah, I work at BioWare and it's awesome. And sometimes it's just good to remind yourself that you are working with such amazing talent with, I don't know, combined hundreds of years of development experience. And it's also that there's no day where I have not learn anything new, so that's something I really appreciate.
Yeah, mine actually ties into that. There's this kind of, I've been doing this for 9 years now, and there's this thing that still amazes me, and it's this like magic that happens where there's like a character or a location or something that I had my small part in putting my creativity into, and somewhere along the line it shows up finished, and it's like that character is standing somewhere breathing and looking around, and like they're actually alive and they have personalities and almost this soul that's kind of bigger than the sum of its parts. And I just that process and that, like, it never ceases to just make me like, oh, wow. Like, so I hope that in another 9 years I'm still just as thrilled by it.
For me, it's definitely the collaboration between all the different disciplines. So even though my craft is programming, I still work with Mike a lot on design, and he at least pretends to welcome my feedback. So
it's all good, buddy. It's all good.
Yeah, for me, it's the astounding opportunity to do this. This just doesn't exist at a lot of places. Even in the games industry, this is a spectacularly rare thing. So, you know, and working with, you know, all these people, all these noobs. Because I'm Gizor. I've been there a while and seen us go through a lot of things, and it's an amazing industry.
There's a lot that if you're not freaking out, I feel a lot better about it.
Yeah.
It's an earthquake to freak me out.
Luke, how long have you been here exactly?
17 years.
There you go.
I was writer zero on BG1.
So we're here to talk specifically about getting a job at BioWare. So what are the qualities that you're looking for when you review candidates? Like, what are the most attractive things about prospective employees?
Down the line again?
Sure.
All right. For me, I think probably the thing that stands out, there's two I always look for. I need to see samples of what you do. So, you know, my discipline's design and you know, I've got a writing background. So if you can show me design docs, if you can show me, you know, ideally a working prototype, something you put together in Unity or a level you built in UDK or something that I can tangibly put my hands on and try, even going to the Neverwinter or Dragon Age tool sets and putting something together there, it becomes a lot more real, right? And you can demonstrate your skill. And then coupling that with documentation lets me see the thought you've put into it. Like, so what was your intent? And I can evaluate, you know, execution compared to intent. And sometimes amazing intent can make up for less than stellar execution, right? Because you can teach that. But it's the chops and the guts. The other big thing, and this gets a little more into when once we're into interview phase, I have almost developed an expectation that if you're coming to interview at BioWare, that you can politely tell me what was wrong with my last game, right? Mm-hmm. And what you would do to fix it. And it may not be what we're going to do to fix it, but being aware of gaming as a whole, playing games in it with a critical mindset and saying, oh, geez, you know, this didn't work, and not going and posting frantically on a forum about how upset you are, yeah. But instead kind of internalizing, going, okay, I can see why maybe they made those decisions, but definitely here's some things we could have done better or a team could have done better. And that level of critical thinking is when you're basically starting to think like a designer, right? Because you're thinking about the game as an art and a craft that can be improved, not something that just annoyed you. Right. So again, you come to an interview with me, I'll probably say, like, did you play Dragon Age 2? What was wrong with that cave? The answer is we used it too many times.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was one.
So, you know, if you're curious and you get there, that's your answer.
No, that's great. I would definitely echo what Mike says. I'm usually the first person that if you do apply on BioWare, I do rest assured, I look at all the resumes and portfolios that you come through. You don't go into a dark abyss. I do actually review every single application that comes through. Basically, what I'm looking for is that initial resume, add on a cover letter. If you're applying for a content creator position, like art, design, writing, definitely include a link to your portfolio. If you don't have a portfolio online, get one. There's tons of resources out there. You can go to WordPress or Tumblr, sending us your profile from one of the forums. You know, there's lots of forums out there where you can add on your gallery and samples and stuff. We also really want to see those side projects that you work on. If you're an animator and you love concept art, we want to see that. Let's say you're, I don't know, a programmer and you cosplay or something like that. And you have pictures. We want to know about those side projects. We want to know about your passions, what you're interested in. And then also that cover letter. Tell us why you want to work at BioWare. Give us a good idea of who you are and what you're interested in. And, I think that's it.
Mm. Yeah, something on that point about, like, seeing your portfolio. I see a lot of people, I have seen a lot of people over the years, that they show the portfolio, they show the projects that were done in the university, and they're kind of like group projects. So everyone brings the same project, and it's really hard to actually recognize what this individual person contributed to the outcome of that game. So either being able to clearly articulate what you contributed to that, or something unique that you guys did off the side from that, that's really important. So that's sort of for the content creation side. Production, for those few of you who want to do it. Personality is really critical. So the ability to just be energetic and to be able to chase down issues and get things done without pissing everyone off.
Tenacious.
Tenacious is really important. And that collaborative feel, it's really hard to try and bring everything together when you have so many awesomely talented people doing their thing. And they all have their own concerns and motivations. So trying to wrap all of that and make sure that everyone's sort of satisfied and everyone can boost the whole sort of completed experience. So personality, teamwork, collaboration, you know, that drive to succeed. And also a really good knowledge and understanding of the market. So what sort of games people play, why they play them, who the competitors are and stuff like that, and recognize where you might want to take something from being a sort of forward-looking vision is really important. And that's all stuff that you can have without experience. So,
Well, David asked the question, you know, what do we want in an employee? I have the pleasure of dealing with the employees after they get hired. I'm not usually part of the whole recruiting process. I want employees to be passionate. I don't want dicks in the office. There it is. HR Sorfers, yeah. No, I don't.
No, seriously,
I,
true that. That's,
yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
True. Every project has a pretty firm no asshole policy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few of us. But we want people that can take that feedback. We want people that don't get mired in their own shit, and they're not doing their, you know, they don't get precious about their work, because I want people that can take that feedback, whether it's behavioral feedback or feedback on their work, and do something with it, make those changes that need to have them be, you know, more productive part of the team. So I want people, and I really want people to have a good sense of humor, because it's necessary. When you're working a lot with groups of people for a long time, you better be able to laugh. So that's what I want. I want to have a beer with there. Ooh. So that's...
There is a pub right downstairs. We tend to go there a lot.
Yeah.
Mark in particular. It's like, Cam, what are you doing? It's like lunch.
It's a
like,
coping mechanism. Okay.
So what's important to me is having open-mindedness, that humility, critical thinking abilities. Obviously, in QA, you have to solve a lot of problems. So as part of our recruitment, we sometimes let people solve puzzles or play dice games to see how they think, what their thinking patterns are. Obviously, a vested interest in RPGs and video games. And when you apply for a job, especially in QA, I want to know why you apply for the job. Obviously, QA in our studio, I don't see it as a foot in the door in the industry. I want people who have actually an interest in testing and who understand that testing is not just sitting in front of a TV or a screen and playing games all day. It's actually hard work, and people who have maybe previous development experience, modding experience, 3D art interest, because we have different support that is required for the development team. So,
yeah, I think mine kind of, I'll speak to it as a concept artist, but I think it applies to every discipline, that there are thousands of people who have portfolios that are pretty and look good and well-rendered and are just, they, like, one is kind of pretty much like the other, but there are definitely people who stand out as their work has thought, and it's surprising, and you can tell that they've put themselves into it, and really they have, you can tell that they've read books and you know, wow. Have taken in culture and all this sort of stuff, and they're bringing more to the table than just it's a robot, like, you know, and because there are thousands of robots. So it's looking for those people who are engaged and who are bringing that new perspective to the table, and they're putting their soul in there.
Yeah, I think being able to that point, I think being able to explain why you did something is really important. So,
oh yeah, yeah, big time.
So for the programming discipline, usually our candidates are pretty concerned with what technologies or tools that they have on their resume. And that's certainly important for senior positions. For sort of entry-level positions, we're really interested in your problem-solving abilities and your ability to do critical thinking. If you're able to nail our problem-solving questions that we throw at you, that's way more important to me than if you know what the mutable keyword is in C++. I'd say also on top of that is your passion for learning. Usually, you know, we can read that based off of what your side projects are, like Mesa was saying. So if we see that you're, you know, living and breathing problem solving in a game domain, then that's really important to us.
Yeah, on the writing side, for submissions anyway, we like seeing things that aren't actually that complicated, because if you submit something that's the most creative thing ever, oh, this breaks all the rules, I don't know that you know the rules. I just know that you broke them. Because I don't know you yet. Because you got to know them before you break them. We like seeing... Mike mentioned our toolset and stuff like that, but we've had successful submissions through just Word docs, short stories, tabletop RPG kind of design, screenplay things. The thing inherent in all of them is the ability to give up to a certain extent the voice of your characters, because there's a lot of people who can tell a really good story when they have control over every single thing, and the first thing you give up in our games is all the motivation for the protagonist. I haven't got a clue what he's thinking. I've got to present the options that I think he's thinking in a way that accommodates
a couple of other ways he might be thinking. And that's the stumbling block for a lot of people that apply. They'll submit something that is a very solid single path with some kind of branching on the sides, and we'll give a little feedback, and then the next thing you get is an upside-down Christmas tree that goes forever because they can't bring things back together. It's a method of character building that is very unique to games, and it's hard to wrap your brain around.
So with the industry changing all the time, and we're getting ready to enter a new generation of gaming, I imagine like the fields of need seem to change with each generation as well. So maybe I'll start with you, Luke, down at the other end. Like, what are some areas of employment that you think are going to be in high demand for people that want to consider, you know, schooling to take a new route?
I don't know.
Can we just grab it?
I've actually been telling people fairly recently, because you see more, again, just speaking from art, there are some colleges and various programs that are kind of like trying to cash in on the idea of video games and all that stuff, but I've been telling people to focus on like, go to places that offer the strong fundamentals, the classics, because in the case of an artist, we don't want a video game artist. We want an artist, because an artist is a good video game artist, but a video game artist, not necessarily a good, you know, it doesn't go both ways. Yeah. So I imagine in a lot of cases, like, you know the basics, know the rules, and then you can break the shit out of them.
Yeah. I mean, from a writing thing, when you're coming into the games, you need to know a lot about the other systems that are at play in the company. You don't necessarily need to know how to do it, but you need to know their limitations, you need to know their benefits, you need to know how they function. I've taken baby's first classes in scripting so I can understand how the technical side works. I've read as much as possible on the art side. I follow this guy as much as all you people do. The writing needs a breadth of knowledge about the genre. So, you know, play the hell out of games. That's key. I mean, we have writers with all sorts of education. Do you need a degree? Well, if you want to cross the border, you do.
Yeah.
But other than that, maybe not. Maybe you just need a strong portfolio. And learn to critique. I mean, I have the fair question that I ask people, which is similar to Mike's, which is, what was wrong with the last game? What would you have done to fix that? And then I have the unfair question, which is, what would that have broken? Because we thought of that. And we still did it because it was necessary. That's a lot of the bugs you encounter. They're there not because, oh, we missed that and we got lazy. No, it's because taking it out, it was a load-bearing member for something worse. You know, like the cave, you know. Yeah, we hated seeing the cave again. Okay, you know what, the cave? What are you going to cut? You going to cut the pearl? You going to cut your apartment? You going to cut Lowtown? What are you going to cut? And can the story, can all your characters withstand that other thing going away so you can have the other thing here?
I'd like to actually go a little back to the question. Let's talk about writing, though. Matt touched on something that's really important about having the fundamentals. That's not just in art. That's totally in programming as well. You need to understand how to that building block of foundation of knowledge. Same with, I think, almost all of our positions. Yeah. You don't necessarily need to know HR for video games.
And that's going to go HR across multiple generations.
Absolutely.
And multiple platforms and multiple genres. It's
So, and I think right now, I want. We want people that can think technically. Like Luke was talking about the idea that you need to know what's going on in the other departments. I need artists that are great artists, but understand that there are still limitations with the tools.
Yeah,
I guess
it's about dependencies.
Even if
you're an artist, you should still sort of understand how programming plays into the game. So
definitely.
You understand the dependencies. And you don't have unrealistic expectations into the programming department.
Yeah, when I first got into the industry, I had no idea what a texture was.
literally. I'm like, what is a texture? What's a model? How does that work?
Shaders?
Yeah, shaders. Like, wow. So, yeah, I went and did a, I mean, I got into the industry, but then later on I went and did a really quick sort of online, like, 3D art course just to get some sort of background and understanding of that. I'm really bad, man. Like, I can draw a stick figure.
It's funny. I've actually been talking about it. I kind of want to do a production one.
There you go.
I don't know where to go with that, but that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Open Excel. Start entering data. There is a few things, I think, for the next gen that that would behoove you, and I think that everyone is correct in saying, get your foundations solid first, right? Because like, you know, you can't come to me with all your next gen information when you don't have first gen, right? Like, you need to understand where we're coming from. You know, play some adventure games and see us later. But the big things that I think that we're seeing in this generation is that we're well past the curve where visual fidelity is the limiting factor and a deciding quality point for your game. It's still absolutely key that you have it, but we're at the point where we're making, you know, the incremental gains as opposed to massive leaps generation over generation. You can see that in the stuff that you've seen come out already, right? It's like, oh, that looks better, but not compared to what it was from going PS1 to PS2. You know, like that was leagues ahead. So the thing that the industry is exploring right now, and I think the thing that I would encourage you to do is understand the act of the exploration is alternate interfaces, right? So we've seen the Wii U, we've seen motion, we've seen smart glass come in, we've got all these doodads, right? Kinect, voice, unidirectional treadmills while wearing an Oculus Rift, which sounds like a terrible idea, but, you know, if you don't value your body, go ahead. Yeah. But, and we actually have those coming into the studio, which is going to be rad. But the thing is, understanding not only that those are coming, but they're not all going to win, right? You know, do you remember the VMU on the Dreamcast, a little memory card that actually you could play? The power glove. Yeah, exactly. And the power glove, yeah. Exactly. They don't all make it. And some of them come back later, right? The power glove is basically Kinect now. It's just you don't need the glove, right? Yep. And the VMU is smart glass, right? So it's cool. It's back, or DS. But they evolve and they change. So being able to watch that and understand not only what do they do, what do they offer, what are the strengths, but knowing the limitations and understanding which ones survive, which ones are the future, and which ones aren't. And then the more you pay attention to that, the more you're grounded for the next generation jump when it's all, I don't know, we plug it directly into our brain. So,
yeah. I think it's understanding what's important to the people that you're making the game for. And that doesn't, it doesn't mean that I have to have something like this or smart glass or Kinect or whatever. But it's an understanding of what experience you want to create for them and what they want. I think that will go across all the different disciplines. So again, it goes back to the point of get fundamentals right. So
I'm going to open this one up to whoever would like to take a stab at it. But I'm curious because a big part of success is having a great mentor, like a great leader to kind of help guide you along your career. And I'm just wondering if any of you can recall a piece of advice that you were given when you started out that really helped shape your career.
Ooh. I'm going to do mine because it came from Luke. Because when I first started, Luke was there, and it was KOTOR. It was deep in production. I think you just, if I remember, it was day two. The lead designer for Jade Empire at the time had just taken off the GDC. So I'm sitting in an office by myself with this new guy who had just come in. And Luke had rewritten an entire dialogue because something got messed up by the programmers. And it was this amazing piece of advice because you were saying, well, you know, sometimes you need to learn to deal with, you know, there's going to be technical problems. You were kind of telling me the story about how this file had gone down. And you were like, for instance, and you double-clicked it, and it opened up, and it reverted again. And as you were telling me, you know, you need to learn to deal with these tough situations and so on, you basically went, "Gah!" And he was gone. Just out the door, a little fire trail behind him. And that actually really stuck with me because you hadn't made any permanent enemies in the course of that rage. But at least you taught me how to externalize it as well. But that's it goes to Cameron's point, right? People skills, conflict revolution, and remembering that you're on a team was something that Luke, you know, kind of, I basically got to see the blast furnace of KOTOR in finaling as one of my first things that I didn't have to be part of, but I got to observe it and go, wow, okay, everybody is really stressed because you're trying to make an amazing Star Wars game, right? And like at that time, the burden was so enormous. And they did it. Absolutely, they did it. And watching that kind of just from the edge was an amazing experience for me. So it was good to have that mentor there, but it was also good to kind of be able to see what they were dealing with and go, okay, cool, one day I'd like to be there. And Jade Empire, we sure got there.
Yeah.
I know I had this one goes farther back for me, but I had a high school art teacher that basically just told me not to use an eraser ever.
That's cool.
And all that did, simple enough, and it was just a little thing, but it was like it forced me to just be confident and just keep moving forward. And that like every drawing, it's going to turn out bad, throw it away or forget it or put it in a vault and laugh at it in 20 years. But it's just like, it's just that confidence, just keep going, just keep going. Don't look back. Just keep doing something new, and learn from it. But just keep going.
Mentors, wow! I never had a mentor that for the industry that sort of impacted me getting in or sort of that. But I did have a mentor that was outside of the industry before I got in. It was when I was working in like corporate kind of stuff, and I had my own business, and I got some other directors involved because I was like 19 or 20 and knew nothing about anything. So I got this guy, and he was an absolute psycho. He was like this salesman guy. He was brutal. But through his actions, he taught me to be professional because and that expectations are really important. And so I very quickly learned that you can't just try 50%. You know, you've got to just go 120% kind of thing. And I think anyone that's sort of successful in the sort of industry they make is like that. You know, they have to push themselves. They have to want to be passionate about what they do and strive for it and chase their dreams and do it. And without someone like that that actually sort of just teaches you that, okay, it's hard work and that's okay, I don't think I would have gotten into the industry.
Something we do as part of our interview process is to try and provide a bit of that. I think very often we see it a lot with design candidates, definitely writing candidates. Is that we'll give you feedback specifically on submission. If you've seen my promising candidate, you've had a good maybe first phone interview, we'll often push something back to you and say, okay, so here's some things you're missing. Let us kind of reset. And I remember Luke went through one recently where he kind of said, okay, so I really like what you're doing, but let's talk through some of the rules that we would go by in terms of how we structure it. And a big part of that is saying, you know, mentoring is about someone giving you feedback, and in our case, we try to see how you respond to the feedback. Can you internalize it? Do you seem to understand it? And how do you take it, right? You know, if the response is radio silence, then we know we probably are going to have a tough working relationship later when we tell you your stuff isn't good. But that's it's something that I think it runs pretty deep in the Bioware Corps. We definitely try to pair up, like, you know, if you're a new writer, you will be put into a room with a group of writers who will all be looking at your stuff and peer reviewing it. So even as part of the interview process, we try to look at that for review. You know, the level designers all get together. They play each other's levels. They critique them. So as part of the interview, expect that as well.
Yeah. So for me, whenever I step into a new role or take on a new job, I'm very self-critical of myself, and I get very stressed out. I get performance anxiety, and it's almost all-consuming. So when I stepped into the lead programmer role for Dragon Age, same thing. I was getting all stressed out, second guessing all my decisions. And my mentor at the time, he told me, you know, why are you letting this eat at you? I mean, what's the worst case that can happen? Worst thing, I'm gonna fire you. And that totally put it into perspective. Like, that's really not the end of the world. I'll get another job somewhere. And that since then, it's helped me put things into perspective.
I think what's important to me is that you know what you want. And that's a question that my mentor asked me. He said, what do you want? And I thought, what do you mean, what do you want? And when I started after university, I always wanted to be a producer, producing movies, because I had a bit of a movie background, be a producer in games. And I was interviewing for a different job for a producer, and the person said, you know, I think you really like to interact with people, you really like organizational structures, I think you are more suited for an operational job. And I took that as an insult. And then I took this job at BioWare, and I realized that this is what I'm made for. But I think sometimes people have this perception of, I think I should be a designer or this or that, because either it's cool or it's
I don't know, it's the flavor of the day or it's what your parents expect, but I think it's like really what you, what will make you happy, because you will do this 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And I think when you choose a path as an artist and you really have a passion and you want to do this and you love doing this, for me at BioWare, my job doesn't feel like a job. It's just, I enjoy it. I love it. Even if the day is tough, even if we have to deal and solve a lot of problems, I still love doing this. And I think in 10 years from now, I'm still going to sit here and say, I still love doing this because I don't see it as a job. And I think that's a big advice that I took from my mentor that I would like to pass on.
I think that's a really important point. I think most people in the industry are probably like that. I mean, it's a dream job for a lot of us, you know, and you have to chase that dream, you know, you have to love what you do. And if you do it, then awesome, right? So if it's really what you want to do, then do it. You know, don't spend 2 years and then go, oh, I'll go work at a bank, because you want to kill yourself working at a bank. you know, so keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. And then if it sacrifices well, like if it means you have to move to Edmonton where it snows,
what?
Right? Then you do it. And that's the level of dedication it can sometimes take to succeed and to get in the industry.
I'd like to point out that, like, I don't, because you came before at me. Everybody at this table except for me moved to Edmonton, Mesa, moved to Edmonton from somewhere else. Mm. So people do it.
Oh, yeah, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's cool. Driving on snow is like driving on a slushy. So there's some fun to it.
And honestly, if you have, well, I've just learned particularly recently, if you have snow tires and the Skyrim soundtrack,
Oh
man.
Yeah, yeah. That would be good.
Winter's amazing.
Well, I think, like, I'd like to open it up and really get your questions. You know, I could sit here and ask some questions all day and will if they don't stop me. So if you guys want to raise your hand, if you have a question you'd like to ask the panel. We've got Hillary running around with a microphone there.
Let's make sure it's on. There we go. So this is sort of a multi-tiered question because you guys... Just because I feel like the nature of your story and how wonderfully human they are, even if they involve things that aren't necessarily human, have sort of acquired a very devoted fan base. So, one, how do you deal with fans that can be so overzealous of and in their affection for your product that they sort of cross a boundary sometimes? And two, are you allowed to be a fan of your own thing? Like, do you create characters that you would want to cosplay in your spare time? Or are you allowed to geek out about your own stuff?
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would just throw in now, I actually even just recently told Game Informer, I don't think they actually use it, but that honestly, I feel like an in-house fan artist. Like, I'm a fan artist on the payroll. Like, a lot of the stuff that like ends up getting put out or that people do or whatever can sometimes just be like speculative or like, wouldn't this be awesome? And it's like, yes, that would, and that's impossible. And that would make a bunch of people have to work really long hours, so we're not doing it. But, you know, it's fun, and we kind of have that back and forth, and it's this constant, exciting discussion.
Sorry, to the overzealous fans question.
Yeah, that's right.
We got lost in geeking out about our own stuff. So that's your pretty clear indicator. You have to recognize, you know, that you know, fan is short for fanatic, right? It's all part of that same process. And, you know, love can very quickly flip into hate on occasion. And
it's all passion, man. It's all passion.
And the thing is you have to be humble about it. You have to respect it. And the thing that we found that really works the best, you know, when people kind of go over the line a little, listen politely. You know, because what they have to say is important to them, and it's guaranteed to be good feedback of some sort. You have to filter though, and the only danger we've had is where, you know, people start to take it a little too seriously, like, you know, that you start hearing 1,000 voices and forgetting that millions of people play the game, and that 1,000 voices is all you hear. So you have to respect that they're taking the time out of their day to tell you, I didn't like this, or I love this, or I love this a little too much. And that's all fine. But when that happens, you also have to take that larger perspective, which is to say, like, look, we sell a lot of copies of our games. A lot of people play them. And, you know, you're typically dealing with a minority whenever there's that level of feedback coming in. So, you know, you don't design your entire game for that 1,000 people, right? That's pretty self-limiting. And again, respect it, listen, you know, respond as best you can, and know when to disengage. you know, when necessary, because we're people and we have limits and you can only handle so much, but you do the best you can.
I have a sort of a multi-tiered question as well. My first is, my background's theater, both writing, acting, directing, and I also have a background in long-form improvisation, which is a very specific form of improvisation. How would you go about showing that on a resume or a thing, because it's something that you do in the moment all the time? And my other question is, in theater, there is, for certain companies, a person called a dramaturg, and what that person does is they go through everything that the theater might create and will create, and while they don't actually specifically touch anything, and the people whose job it is to do certain things, it's their job, they are a person that makes sure that everything sort of falls into step with itself so that there's a line moving forward instead of a bunch of scattered people moving forward. Is there a job like that in the video game industry?
Producer. Yeah. So, producer, join the dark side. Seriously.
And it's really, and when you're asking how to show your skills in improvisation on a resume, you got to figure that one out.
And you can also have links to your videos if you want to show that. I would suggest putting that either on your cover letter or on your resume. Having a blog, having those videos up on there also might be another avenue for you to look at too.
I'll give you the most powerful thing improv teaches you, and it's something we use all the time in brainstorming, is that you fundamentally, all good improv, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that it starts from a place of yes and, right? Okay, good. So otherwise, we've been doing it wrong for like a decade. because it's the thing, there is a very valuable skill there, and it goes back to people skills, which is, I've had an idea. Okay, yes, that is an idea. And you grow from it, right? Because if you start saying no, but, then you're instantly chopping ideas down, you're cutting them down. And we use a lot of techniques like that. One that we use on different writing teams has been, you know, okay, I'm owning that this isn't a good idea, but it might get us to a good idea. So let me just throw it out there, right? And, you know, there's no ego in it. It's just like, okay, what if you rode a unicycle? And it's like, that's not a great idea. But, okay, but then that turns into, yes, and but it could be like a different type of transportation. And suddenly you grow and you grow and you grow and you hit the microphone. But that's what improv gives you. So when you want to talk about it, you'd want to say that that's the valuable skill you've learned, right?
Yeah. And I hate the word no. It drives me absolutely mental. Like, everything is possible. Mm-hmm. It's just, to Luke's point, what are you willing to give up for it? Yeah. So.
Yeah, and we have a writer at BioWare right now who has that exact background. Kathleen Roussard, who worked on Mass 3, came out of... legendary Edmonton comedy troupe, Three Dead Trolls in a Baggie, and Theater Sports, and that's Markner does that now. So it's a great background to come from. I'm not sure what her application process was, so I can't speak to it.
All right, hello. I just had a question for maybe those of us that are coming from a career change, like, we're in a certain career, but we'd like to get into the video game industry. Or for those of us that haven't even started college and we're very new to this and we're a little overwhelmed, what would be some good words of advice for those to get started, like putting together a resume? Like, what would you, types of things that you would recommend putting on there, or any just advice, general advice on getting started on putting something together?
I'd say that one of the big things for any discipline is showing stuff that you have finished. Like, because that's one of, like I was saying yesterday, that's one of the hardest things to do is to finish something. And the more you've done, I mean, that's what a degree is. It's like, yep, I finished it. Wow, good for you. Awesome.
Yeah, now what can you do?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, finish an illustrated, finish like a storyboarded sequence, finish a animatic reel, finish a short story, whatever, yeah.
I would also echo doing a lot of research and exactly where you want to go and what type of skill set you want to pursue in the gaming industry. Everyone up here on the panel comes from a different discipline, so really identifying exactly what you want to do and finding out, you know, if you're looking at a particular company, find out who who the people are in that discipline and doing some research on that on their background and seeing where they came from and how they got started and sort of their career track will give you a good idea maybe as to how you can start yours.
Yeah, maybe have a chat. If you're coming from a different industry, maybe have a chat to someone who's now in the games industry so you can get an idea about how your current industry skills can translate across so that you can articulate that when you're in the interviews.
So one thing I did while I was at university and after university were internships. Because when I didn't know really which field I'm interested in, just apply for different types of internships to see if you would actually like that type of work or not. And something you can put on your resume as well.
And having realistic expectations about starting out is really critical. I've had, you know, a few times where people will be like, I want your job. It's like, well, that's a fine long-term goal, but you're probably not starting there, right? You know, you want to start in a discipline, you want to work your way up, and you need to, you know, there's lots of draw. I mean, you know, even in production, there's folks that basically keep the wheels moving, right? They get pizzas or, you know, someone needs a big thing for a presentation, cool, or they end up driving your game when it has to be shown off just because they have the time, right? Oh, executives are here. Quickly go load the game. I'll do it, sir. And that's an incredibly valuable skill set.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, your level of trust goes up and so on. For writers, you know, I remember my first assignment was write that fisherman who talked about fish. You know, and you build up from there, right?
Hi. My question is kind of similar. I'm looking at a career change from the mining industry. I'm kind of just wondering how – I'm having trouble, because I love games, just narrowing down what I want to aim for. How did you know that you were suited for game design or production or QA, that kind of stuff?
I know. I think it's an interest, a real passion for it, right? Like, if that's something that you're sort of really interested in, then you can test this. Again, speak to some people in the industry. It's really important to network before getting into the industry, and you can then start to see the different types of personalities and find out a little bit more about the jobs before you start really kind of digging down into one. So that's probably the most important thing. So just get as much information and see, try and envisage yourself in that sort of role of it, when you're talking to someone.
Yeah, try different disciplines.
Yeah.
If you need to force yourself to do it on a regular basis, that's probably not the discipline for you. But if you start doing it, you know, without even thinking about it, and that's what you stay up all night doing, then that's probably the right one for you.
There is something that helped me a lot that was hearing the idea that, not just for getting hired, but for the idea of being promoted, was thing that, like, do the job you want to be promoted into, essentially. Like, if you want to be a lead, start being a lead, and then they'll give you the title. Like, that kind of tends to be more how it works than the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, I did a career change, for example. I was in a previous life a journalist for computer graphics and games, and I did marketing and PR for 3D software. And I realized that what I really liked is to critique things, to find problems, point out those problems, communicate those problems. And that's where I thought, so how can I transfer the things that I know, CG, marketing, PR, writing, editing, text, Photoshop, and so on, into a different job? And this is where I said, okay, I just said in the beginning that I don't see QA as a foot in the door, but ultimately that's what I did when I said, okay, let's try and see in QA, maybe there's a path that will bring me somewhere where I think all my skills will come together. And then ultimately I said, this is what I really like. This is what my passion is for, and I stuck with what my passion is for. And I think that passion is really important. That you know, you need to know what you want. What is your passion?
So, my name is Matt too. So,
man.
Yeah. My question is for Matt and Masa a little bit too. Right now, the market is really competitive for getting into an art career, and I think a lot of times, you know, when you look at a description for a job, you're looking at, you know, must have all of this experience in this thing, and it's really overwhelming because, you know, for every one job, there's 20 people that could probably do it. So, I guess, like, would you recommend being good, like, incredibly good at one or two skills, or be a sort of a jack of all trades and look at it from that perspective? And then the other question as well is just sort of like, when you started, with a major company, like finding the pace for like how quickly you have to produce art, okay. and just like being petrified of working for a big studio. Can you describe a little bit?
Oh yeah. For 3 years, I was terrified that someone was going to walk into my office and realize what I was being paid for and kick me out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, actually it was Matt Goldman. I saw him just step out, but he was the one that found me and hired me, and he's the art director on Dragon Age Inquisition right now. And to speak to your last question first, he told me, like, sometimes just watch a movie, like, because I came in and I was just, like, paranoid, like, I need to produce, I need, just so I, like, no one throws me out for doing this thing that I'm in love with. And I got burnt out after, like, 2 weeks. I just sat at my desk for a day, just, like, frozen, because I had nothing left. And so he just said, like, it's okay, you need to take in stuff from around the world and just, like, build up your inspiration again and like, don't just lock yourself away and work. So that, I found that really helpful. Okay. Well, I was going to say that as to the specified versus jack of all trade, like, I would say lean towards being specified, but there's I draw and I do stuff, but I find I'm doing like storyboarding stuff for marketing, stuff for paint overs, and like you kind of just do things. So I'd say lead strong with that thing that you love to do. Like that's because that's going to be where your strength is. That's going to be where you put in all your work. But maybe if you have other interests as well, like let it bleed into those areas. And I gotta say too, this is a big one for me, was that I was told by teachers that like there are a million kids that want to be an artist. So like plan to do something else. But it's like at, you know, 13, thankfully I'd watched enough Disney movies and my parents were encouraging enough that they said like, no, well, yeah, a million kids want to do it, but I'm the millionth kid. Like, I'll be the one to do it. Somebody has to. And so try to get into that mentality, and you got to make the sacrifices. Like, there's something in your life right now that you know you can sacrifice and replace with hard work in order to just push yourself that extra mile. And I'd say just make the cut and just start fighting for it.
Yeah, and keep in mind with job descriptions, oftentimes they're wish lists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, at BioWare, you know, you may not get in on your first application. Keep applying. You know, if you look across the other game studios and look at their job openings, a lot of them tend to be senior. I don't know if you've come across that, but, you know, but keep applying. And if you're not working in the industry, create your own assignments and create your own projects. That way you can keep your skill set fresh, your work fresh, you know, keep talking and blogging and tweeting and putting your stuff out there. Get involved in the communities around you, not mm-hmm. only, you know, networking events and gaming cons like this, but then also forums, and see what people are talking about, start connecting, and you'll start to connect those dots. It does take a while. Don't be discouraged.
Yeah,
and keep going.
And just on that point, even if you don't see a job opening at the moment,
yeah.
It doesn't hurt to reach out to the guys, because, I mean, I was talking to you for like a year before a job opening came up. So you know, it's worthwhile just stay in contact.
Yeah, definitely. There are three artists right now out there that send me their portfolios about once a year.
Yeah.
And they have made such staggering improvement. I'm basically waiting until the day they're sitting beside me. Like, it's seriously, it may be a few years yet, but just watching the progress is tremendous. And, you know, they're staying on my radar. They're like, it's so, yeah, totally worth fighting for.
Matt, are there contests and stuff like I'm remembering CG Hub and stuff that do theme things where it's like into even not just saying your own assignments, but going out into a community where they're like, okay, this week we're doing this challenge. And that can be really good because you're getting feedback around a theme that everyone's already kind of geared their brain up for. That way you don't get the, yeah, that's good. You know, you get like, no, but I was working this. And you can see all kinds of comparative stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So that can be very, very powerful.
Just to jump back on what Cameron said, Cameron and I actually had talked, it was about a year
that's
and a half
more than you, yeah,
before
yeah.
he got hired,
yeah.
Just dropping me notes saying, hey, what's happening, what's going on at BioWare, we'd love to get over there. You know, and we stayed in touch for a while,
yeah.
And then one day I'm like, I have an opening, and Cameron, and we just made things happen,
yeah.
And he was hired, you know, a couple of weeks later, so maintaining those relationships and establishing them and then maintaining them is really important.
Not nagging. Don't nag.
No.
Please don't
no.
nag them.
Be real.
Yeah.
Right? We're all humans. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Chris, and I come from a professional and creative writing background, so I was wondering, I worked with a team of fellow writers on publishing a book over the past year, from securing the grant through to our upcoming launches, so I was wondering how would I...
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome.
How would I optimize the different elements involved in that process, editing, securing the grant, just anything in there? What elements are you looking for most on a resume? Which parts would stand out?
What did you do most?
I did mostly writing, editing, and also I'm in charge of some of the bookings for the book launches and organizing part of that. So.
Let's call that out. That's probably the simplest.
Yeah, maybe even putting together some case studies or a good overview, you know, to give us an idea of the breadth of your project, and then including writing samples along with that. Would be great to include as well.
All right, thank you.
Hi, my name's Ram. I'm interested actually in marketing and marketing management, so I was wondering to hear from anyone about what they look for in those kind of people, not to hire necessarily, but working with them as well.
We don't have anyone from Mark. Is Jarrett around anywhere at back? No.
But I mean, as you, for you guys as developers, what do you look for in your marketing partners when you're working with them?
So
it's not a do as you say sort of thing.
Yeah, critical things I think are, where we interface with marketing is that marketing can, at the beginning, offer us a lot of feedback in terms of competitive landscape. What are key features, and to some degree, reading the tea leaves and understanding the future, where the trends are going, right? And in ideal scenario, marketing is able to kind of work with analytics to kind of look forward and distill that down into developer speak. In terms of the game itself, right? What I find marketing delivers the most is, so, okay, designers and stuff, what is your game? Help us to understand the entirety of your game, and we will tell you the things that we think will help you stand out, things that make you unique or that really are going to capture the imagination, and then helping to build a campaign around that idea that these are the things that sure, you've got a lot of stuff. You have walking. Every game has walking. But, is it dragons? Is it so on? And, so more recently, with Inquisition, a lot of the discussion has been around, the fact that, as an RPG, it's an experience, right? And the marketing guys are trying to say, well, how can we help craft an experience? How can we help people look at Inquisition as more than just, oh, it's a feature. It's more like, okay, the sum of these parts combined together. And building a campaign and working with partners and getting key art and all these different elements that essentially work towards a single thrust and a single theme that help the game to kind of develop an identity. And our job as developers is to try and give you guys an honest appraisal of what that identity could possibly be, and based on features, based on our goals, based on our internal kind of drives, and of course, deadlines.
I'd say, too, I just want to add on the reverse of that. One thing that's been great about our marketing team right now, and I kind of wish Jarrett was here, but that, is that they have a tremendous respect for what we do as well, and that even working with Jarrett, and it's like they have a perspective that we don't have. And so they can say, this is how people respond to certain things. This is the data we have that this works, this doesn't work. You want to lean more towards this and more towards that. So even on a day-to-day content creation level, we can be working towards building stuff that we know is going to send the right message, that we're not off in left field. Like, we know we want to say this, they can help us say it in the right language. So having that relationship and building that up is like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's often marketing can really help us because there is, to Mark's point, a lot of stuff in our heads about what we want to try and create. And marketing in a really collaborative sort of environment can help us actually understand more about the product that we're making. So help us understand what is important, what is not important, where to focus and where to spend time. So it's a back and forth relationship, and it's an embedded relationship. It's really powerful. So yeah, that's what I'm just, that skill of being able to work with people and collaborate and brainstorm together, improvise.
My question is for the programmer. I know when a lot of people think about programming, there's a lot of most people go to AI and then graphics programming. Is there any other programming that people don't think about or positions in there?
Well, I guess going back to the question earlier about, you know, what are the positions that are opening up in the next generation? The main thing is to pay attention to the trends that you're seeing. Like we were talking about, games are now getting connected from many different devices. You're seeing a lot of examples on the show floor with, you know, companion apps, things like that. Games are getting a lot more distributed. Even Inquisition, it's campaign, but we just announced this Dragon Age Keep system, which is this cloud-based solution for bringing your choices across. And that's, you know, games are getting more and more complex, being distributed over more and more systems. So being able to work with, you know, server APIs and things like that, that's also extremely valuable. And that's one of the positions we struggle a lot to hire for.
I would add user experience to that as well, right? Mm-hmm. UI and UX programming are absolutely critical. We've always had, we've always had great UI UX programmers, but it's, you know, the thing is, when as soon as you're now developing a UI that needs to develop a consistent feel across multiple devices, that becomes even more challenging, right? And those devices communicate. That's also kind of part of that same future push on gaming. But I think as well, you know, I talked about the visual fidelity fading. I think that we can make the games better and easier to play and more intuitive to control and so on. And some of my favorite programmers to work with are the guys who they're working with the art team and the design team to somehow make it look, feel, play, and ultimately be an experience that a player can quickly pick up and understand, you know, with whatever control system they're using.
Yeah, so graphic artists and technical art, sorry, graphic programmers and technical artists are always really hard to find and really valuable. And really good gameplay programmers are incredibly awesome.
Actually,
you know, even though it's not like a specialist, really high technical field, a gameplay programmer is wicked.
Yeah, any role that can straddle multiple disciplines, like a gameplay programmer that has a good eye to game design, or a graphic programmer that has a good eye for art, or a technical artist that, you know, understands the technical aspect of the tools and the workflow, those are really hard to find because it requires a huge investment in the individual's time to sort of learn two different disciplines.
Point of clarity, shock. Are there any ones that are easy to find? No.
So anything is great.
Yeah, it's pretty much all good, is I think the point you're taking away. Yeah.
And then we have programmers across
all disciplines.
Whether you're an animation programmer, physics, rendering, graphics, tools, UI, server, client, front end, back end.
QA.
You know, QA. Yes, absolutely. Most of our programmers do have a very good foundation in C++, C# if you're more on the tools side, some WPF. If you're on the client and architecture side, Java, SQL is very helpful as well. But honestly, if you're getting an education in programming, really focus on C++.
And don't forget, I mean, we have programmers across all those fields, but we also have programmers that are designers, and programmers that are artists, and programmers that are in QA. Like, it's not just working in programming in the programming department. A good portion of our designers actually have CS degrees. So,
I think all of my combat design team are computer science graduates, and more than half of my level designers as well.
And that helps the programming team immensely because we don't get requests that are just insanely impossible to implement.
Well, except for me.
Hi, my name's John. I got to take a point to Cameron. He said working for a bank sucks, and I work for a bank, and it sucks. I'm in their IT department. Yeah. But my question is, I'm actually from the Philadelphia area in Pennsylvania, and that's why I work today. And I'm wondering how important location is, because the game scene in Philadelphia today isn't that strong. There's a couple small devs in the area, and you have to know them to get involved with them, and it's hard to like get your foot in the door there. So I guess my question is, does location matter? Like, if I applied for a job here, for an entry-level job, does that matter at all?
Well, we hire people from all over. It doesn't really matter. If you're trying to break in, location can sometimes be important, but just knowing that you're willing to relocate is huge.
Yeah.
And I would definitely mention that on the top of your resume or cover letter, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I moved from Australia to Everton, and it was a no-brainer for me. I just pick up and go, right? And the guys are really good at helping you move, so that's fantastic. And in Melbourne, where I grew up and where I started my career, the games industry died as well. So I didn't have a lot of choices about what I wanted to do. I knew that AAA games, big games, RPGs in particular, was what I wanted to do. So I knew I had to move overseas at some point. So, yeah, dedication and just if there's anything you can do, even in Philadelphia, while you're still looking, then do that. So really try and reach out to those guys that are in Philadelphia, and working little side projects with them will help while you're, you know, chatting to HR about opportunities. So
there's also, I mean, we do have to be considerate of the fact that we are, like the BioWare Edmonton and Montreal studios are obviously in Canada, and we have to make sure we fulfill the immigration requirements. So for a lot of the, I have to be very honest with you here, for a lot of the entry-level positions, it's more difficult, obviously, to get somebody across the border, because we have to prove to the Canadian government that we can't find a candidate or a somebody in Canada that can do the job. However, that
move
doesn't.
To
Austin.
Get a job in BioWare, Austin.
Austin's excellent. Yeah. But I mean, and I'd be very, you know, inappropriate, I guess. I don't know. There's lots of great game companies. We're one of them, but hey, get experience there and come work for us later.
That's exactly it.
Very
true. Yeah.
Well, I can see we're getting short on time here, so we're going to take two last quick questions, and then this panel is graciously lending their time to us to have you come up, and I believe if you've got some things you brought with you that you'd like to get signed, I'd be happy to do that. If we didn't get to your question, feel free to come up and talk to us.
Hi, my name's Ryan. I have a background in customer service. In fact, actually, I've been in customer service for the better part of a decade myself. And I know that none of you guys are in that particular department, but I was wondering if that is something that there is some room for that in the gaming industry, or should I start looking at going back to school and going into another kind of programming?
We do hire in customer service. I do think it depends on the studio and what type of game that they develop there. I know in our Austin studio, sometimes we hire to support our MMO games. And there's other studios around EA as well that do hire. They tend to be in very specific locations, though. Honestly, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but if you went onto our site, you could probably find those customer service roles on there and get an idea of where we're hiring the bulk of those people in what location
they're in. Yeah, you can also think about like the sort of community side of things. It's not far off that route kind of thing, so... And we have those in Edmonton, so it's not impossible.
I know Austin has one of the big customer service centers in terms of that too. So just from one of the locations, but they are across multiple places. I've been there; it's pretty swanky. Yeah. Their desk is nicer than mine.
You're never at your desk.
That's true.
That might be why. Yes, yes.
There's a couple of
the office is
there,
my
that's
desk.
About it. Yeah.
Cameron, it's really great to hear an Australian on the board. Actually, I came from Melbourne for PAX to help
cool.
Promote an indie two indie titles that I've been working on.
Really, you came here from
Melbourne
just for PAX?
Yep.
Rock on.
Did you know there was one in Australia, right?
Yeah. Got to tell you, much tinier than this one. In Australia, the industry is quite, you know, it's starting to get the ball rolling, but it's still really quite small. And you can say to someone, oh, you know, I'm doing game development, that they go, that's great, yeah, you're not a delicate snowflake, you know, when are you going to study teaching?
Yeah.
So it's very much, there's not much room for it anywhere there, and obviously I've been looking and I'm applying for, you know, once my portfolio is up to scratch, applying for different larger companies around the world, and especially BioWare. I love BioWare, but I suppose what's the whole difficulty with, if I'm looking overseas, do I, you know, would I move there first, or would I try my luck contacting companies? And how likely is it that I would be hired over, so what you addressed before, someone who's closer in geography?
I mean, you can speak to the hiring stuff, but
yeah.
I took years of building up experience before I joined BioWare. So, you know, you may need to do that. Melbourne's really hard. I mean, there's great resources, the GDAA and all sorts of stuff that you would know about. There's lots of indies to get involved with. There's government grants that you can use, obviously, with the indie stuff, as you would know. All of that's really good. And then, but if you then want to move, you could potentially look at, I mean, even Sydney might have some stuff still. There's the Team Bondi guys, that, or ex-Team Bondi guys that have sort of built something out. Brisbane now? Okay. So you might want to do that sort of stuff first. And there might be some other countries like Singapore, et cetera, which may have a better opportunity to be able to move straight in as sort of like a more junior position. So there's Ubisoft there and other, you know, big companies. So maybe try and build up that experience if it's too hard.
Right. I mean, like we were talking, it might not be a straight across move. We have had people that have come on working holidays and then they've gotten a position with us. But what happens is, it's such a sad conversation that I get to have with them, is, okay, that's really great. We could hire you for a contract because it was a more junior level role. But you don't have the experience to be able to get a work permit through the company, and at the end of your contract, you're going to have to leave the country. It's such a sad, and they, you know, I work with them and they're trying to figure out all these different routes, and they're like, I saw on the website this, and I saw on the, I'm like, I can't do it, you know, so.
Have you spoken to Iron Monkey, like the EA sort of Iron Monkey group? Okay. Yeah. Okay. We can sync up afterwards and I can give you some contacts if you.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you all so much for coming to see us. We hope you had a good time here at our first panel of the day. We've got lots more coming over the next 3 days. So come back and see us again. Big round of applause for our panelists.
And that brings us to the end of this episode's BioWare-based panel coverage. We hope you enjoyed listening.
Thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate or Facebook/NerdAppropriate. Email us directly. That is Matt, Hillary with one L, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. And we have over 100 episodes to check out. So definitely subscribe and let us know what you think. Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.